Yo Pods, check out Meet Mitch and Leewood for award-winning barbecue, outstanding atmosphere, and your destination to watch all your favorite March Madness action. Tailgating for opening day? Place your order online and pick up on way to the game. Meet Mitch Barbecue, East 95th and Mission in Ranch Martin or Shopping Center.
Welcome to the Home Stretch Sports Radio 810 WHB. I am Sterling Holmes live in studio on what has become a gorgeous Tuesday afternoon with you until 8 o'clock. Kyle is behind the glass. We joined by Daniel Harms talking Chiefs at 6:15. We'll be talking baseball with David Leskey around 7:10. Fun show. Pack show. 2-hour show. Kyle, how are you?
I'm scrambling back here.
Yeah, sorry about that. I threw it to you. I thought you were ready, and then I was trying to pontificate on some thoughts to make sure I gave you some time. I got enamored by the NIT, the not invited tournament. We got Georgia against Xavier. So I'm just sitting here thinking, life's good. Life is good.
Oh, baby. March is here. It's official. I know it's March, what is it, the 19th now? So we're 19 days into March, but March has finally arrived.
You know, biggest snub had to be Mizzou. You know, I was waiting for Mizzou to get called and then called. Like, even just to call them to say, hey, you guys, come on. You serious this year? You serious this year, fellas? All right. I do want to talk a little college basketball before we get into Chiefs talk with Daniel Harms again at 6:15. I was at the Big 12 tournament down there at Miller Lite Fan Fest, presented by who other than Sports Radio 810 WHB. I was down there Thursday, Friday, Saturday. A lot of fun, man. I was emceeing, kind of hosting down there on stage, and it was a blast. I want to give a huge shout out to Iowa State fans. If you're from Iowa State, if you're a fan of Iowa State, if you've ever been to Iowa, thank you, because you were somehow down there at P&L. You were down there at KC Live. It was electric. It was like a Chiefs game. I mean, it was insane. I'm not even being facetious right now when I say it was like a Chiefs performance down there at P&L. It was incredible. You made my life so much more enjoyable. Ended up going to the Big 12 championship game where the easiest money I have ever won happened when I bet on Iowa State. Like, that was silly. I took Iowa State plus 4.5.
Okay, I like it.
I was like, this is free money. Free money. Had to be free money. You know what it was? It was free money. Okay, because Iowa State waxed the floor with Houston, and it was like a home game. Again, I won some money, and if you want to win some money, if you want to play, if you want to bet, make sure you go to ESPN Bet. It's now live in Kansas as the official sportsbook of ESPN. ESPN Bet is the only place to find daily exclusives and offers with your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Find all your favorite markets and bets like in-game wagering, cross-sport parlays, teasers, and all the props you can handle. That's ESPN Bet. Download today. What a play. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. Again, NFL's done. March Madness, we're here, baby. We're almost here. We're almost here. And again, if you want to have some fun, get a little extra bumps, get your palms sweaty, you think you're smarter than the bracketologists, go to ESPN Bet. They got it all right there. I know I'll be throwing some money down. A few teams I want to get to, actually, because, Kyle, I found a really good research piece on the X. And this was from Connor Allen NFL. Okay? Connor Allen NFL. I thought this was pretty fascinating right here. A lot of successful teams in March meet a couple of qualifications. You have to be top 21 offensively and top 37 defensively in the nation. Okay? Both, right? You got to meet both those requirements. UConn. So, again, everyone listening, I'm helping my bracket based off this stuff. Some's obvious, right? You're going to put UConn going far. The majority of you are, I think, UConn. In my opinion, I said UConn's the best team in college basketball this year. That's my opinion. I have UConn winning the national title. Sorry, spoiler alert. So UConn is ranked first in this metric with them offensively ranking first in the nation and defense 11th. Purdue, fourth offensively and 21st defensively. They came in second in this metric. Duke, right? If you want a little bit of a upset pick. Now, it's Duke, so how much of an upset is it really? But four seed Duke ranking 7th offensively and 26th defensively, which tells me that their record might not show how good their upside can be. Arizona ranking 8th offensively and 12th defensively. Spoiler alert, I have Arizona in my Final Four. I have Duke in my Final Four. Auburn coming in 5th. Auburn's a really interesting one. They're 10th offensively and 4th defensively. I love Bruce Pearl. If you know me and some of Mizzou takes, I'm always bummed Mizzou did not go after and get Bruce Pearl.
You just like him for the suits, though.
Part of it, yes. You all know I'm a big suit guy on college basketball coaches because you can understand how angry they are when it comes to the tie, the rolling up the sleeves, the jacket comes off.
Yeah, there it is. The jacket
the sweat off. Under the arm. You can always tell how angry they are. I like that. So Auburn's 5th in this metric. Again, they are a 4 or 5 seed? They're 4. I have them in my Sweet 16. So again, you don't have to use this. I'm just trying to give some folks advice because I want us all to win. Okay? Winners only. 6th ranked in this metric, Creighton. 12th offensively and 24th defensively in the nation. I know some people aren't super high on Creighton. I think Creighton actually has a fairly easier schedule, at least to get to the Sweet 16. I'm not high on South Carolina. I'm not high on Akron. It's when they get to Tennessee. That's going to be a fun game. Houston, 17th offensively, 2nd defensively. But after that performance at T-Mobile, I don't know, man. I'm out. I have Duke beating Houston in the Sweet 16.
That's enough to sway you?
I have them losing the Sweet 16.
Okay.
They're great defensively. I think, again, they're ranked 2nd defensively in the nation according to this. I think they're, again, that's fair. They're a top 3 defensive team. But offensively, now, if you watch that game, yeah, it was a home game for Iowa State. I mean, it was packed. It was loud. It was crazy. Yes, that was one of the worst shooting displays I've ever seen from an organization anywhere. Like, second graders I've seen hit more shots than Houston. I mean, it was embarrassing. So, I'm getting swayed a little bit there. But it wasn't just them missing open shots. They didn't have a lot of folks that could create off the dribble. There wasn't a guy who I'm sitting here, you know, Shed, obviously, right? Shed's great. But I'm watching that game, and I'm like, Houston's going to be lucky to get to 65 against good defenses. Now, against most teams, that's going to be enough to win because they're that good defensively as well. But when they face a team like Duke, who's also potent offensively and solid defensively, I don't think Houston matches up well. I just don't. That's how I have it breaking down. Even if they beat Duke, you know, if they play Kentucky, in the elite, like I don't see Houston having this easy path just based on their style. So for me, I'm out. It reminds me a little bit of Virginia. The year they lost to the 16 seed. Mm-hmm. Now, again, they came back the next year and won, but they were also better offensively that year. This Houston team, again, give them all the credit. They made it through the gauntlet of the Big 12. They also had a little bit of an easier Big 12 route, a little bit of an easier schedule than a lot of teams, including KU, had in the Big 12. That's just my personal opinion there. And then Marquette comes in at 8 in this metric, 21st offensively, 19th defensively. So again, if you're looking at 8 teams based on this metric, both the offensive top 21 and defensive top 37 qualifications, you're looking at UConn, Purdue, Duke, Arizona, Auburn, Creighton, Houston, and Marquette. The only real surprises probably for folks are Auburn and Duke. Maybe Creighton surprises some people. So again, nothing groundbreaking, but if you want to look up some metrics, not a bad one to take a little look-see at when you're creating your March Madness bracket. All right, Kyle, how many brackets do you do?
I've got 2 so far this year. I'm probably going to fill out a 3rd.
Yeah, 3 tops. Mm-hmm. It's like fantasy football. 3 tops. Any more than 3, I don't care. I'm done. I'm not giving my heart into it.
No, exactly. Yeah.
My heart's not in it. So I'm doing three. Do you have a upset pick? Do you have a team who's a, let's say, a 9 or higher going on a run?
There's a 10-7 I love. It's the team, they're going to beat Washington State.
Yeah, I have them too. Drake.
Drake, that's right. My fault. I do like me some Drake, man. I've seen them play like twice
this
year.
You took one 10 seed?
Yeah, that's right.
Bulk. Bold right there, Kyle.
Listen, I don't fill out many upsets. Frankly, I think it's mostly because I know. Frankly, mostly it's because I'm not familiar with all the freaking teams in the bracket anyway.
If you think I don't have James Madison upsetting Wisconsin 12-5, you're out of your gourd. If you don't think I have the 12th seed McNeese squad winning two games, yeah, I have them beating Gonzaga and Kansas.
Wow.
Two blue bloods.
Wow.
McNeese. What is your team name? Sorry, the McNeese what's? Cowboys. McNeese State Cowboys? Is that what you guys are? I don't care. Cowboy up.
I think they got rid of the state.
They're 30-3 this year, and they're very good offensively. I like offensive teams come March.
Now, if they get past Gonzaga, then Kansas, you say?
Uh-huh. Then Purdue.
Then Purdue.
They have
next.
An absolute gauntlet.
Yeah. I mean, that is a hell of a run.
I'm a bold man, okay?
Clearly, yeah.
Sorry. I'm not going to sit here and just chalk it up like you, Kyle. I could just Kyle goes to the bracket and just press the button that says chalk. There's the button that you can press where it's every single favorite that gets picked. That's Kyle. And goes, I filled my bracket out, guys.
Yeah, you fill out one that's all favorites and then all upsets. See which one gets higher points.
Michigan State is interesting because I don't think they're very good, but yet it's Tom Izzo come March, and that always is a recipe for success. So I'm excited for March Madness. My favorite time of the year. It's what I grew up watching during spring break as a child. This was my spring break, was sitting in front of a TV watching basketball. And now look at me doing the same thing. Take a break. Come back. We're joined by Daniel Harms, film analyst of RGR Football, talking Chiefs home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Quick note as we were going to break. According to a tweet from Jordan Gusky, covering University of Kansas Athletics for the Topeka Capital Journal. Says, quote, Bill Self said Kevin McCullough has been ruled out of the NCAA tournament. No, Kevin McCullough. Samford is a team that averages 86 points a game. My McNeese round two upset. Already felt pretty good.
Way to call your shot.
I called it before I even knew. Hey, pal. That's what I do on this show. Bold man.
Now, I've got some brackets to redo.
All right, let's talk Chiefs now. Daniel Harms, film analyst of RGR Football. You can follow him on the X at InHarmsWay19. Harms, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. Today's my voice is recovering a little bit. I went to a concert over the weekend with my wife, and it's just a little bit grainy still, but, you know, I'm doing good now. Hopefully we get to see some more small moves from the Chiefs this week as the second wave of free agency starts and kicks off.
Who did you see? What concert?
We went to an Alkaline Trio concert in
nice
St. Louis. Yeah, you know, they've been around a while. Most people don't know, but, you know, alternative punk band they were at. So, you know, like I said, in St. Louis, they were joined by Drug Church, and it was a great show. They're a really good band to see live. It's my wife's favorite band, so we decided to bring the in-laws over and watch the little one for a night while we went over to St. Louis and have a great time.
Yeah, and if those of you that are listening that don't know, and you guys like Blink-182, Matt Skiba, who is the singer of Alkaline Trio, was also in Blink-182 for a little bit.
Yep. He did, I think, a couple of their albums recently.
Yeah.
A couple of them, yeah. Then they got their lead singer back recently, and now they're touring as well. So yeah, it was a great, great show. And like I said, my voice is coming back. I did the live last night on RGR, and I could tell near the end of it, I'm like, okay, we're getting a little bit thin over here. So it's working its way back.
I've been singing too much Creed and Gavin DeGraw recently at band practice, and I can't sing. I'm the drummer, so I don't know why I'm singing, so that's why my voice hurts. All right, now you got to the Creed. You got to really get it, you know.
Down there, yeah.
But let's talk about Hollywood Brown. Let's talk about what seemingly looks like the best contract of the offseason. This is absurd. You look at what Jerry Jeudy just got restructured with. 3-year, $58 million extension with the Browns. Hasn't played a snap yet. Again, that's why the Browns are the Browns and the Chiefs are a great organization. But still, getting Hollywood Brown for what was it? 7 mil up to 11 million. I don't think Hollywood Brown is necessarily a legitimate wide receiver one by any means. I think he's a really good wide receiver two. But still, that price for that sort of production, how did he go that cheaply to Kansas City?
You guys got some foot injury problems. And when you have the Liz Frank injuries that he's had to deal with over the last couple of seasons, he's had two straight years where he hasn't played a full year. And that puts a little bit of hesitation in most teams. We're kind of seeing right now with some of the luxurious knee talks that the knee might be what's making that stall a little bit. So the reason that the Chiefs were able to get him, I think it was $6.5 million that was guaranteed for this contract. So a really, really, really great signing for them. But again, it's based on the assumption that he plays the whole season. If he plays all year for Kansas City, then it's a win, almost regardless of what happens, because you're getting, like you said, that wide receiver two. I would say wide receiver 2.5. I think he's able to do a bit more than just, or maybe 1.5.
I was about to say, wait a minute, Harms. I think he's better than 2.5 now.
Yeah, no, we're going the opposite direction. But you guys understood what I was trying to say. Like, he compliments Rashee Rice very well in terms of the three-level threat that he is. And if they want him to stretch the field and open up more space for Rashee Rice, then he's going to be able to do that. And like I said, when you have the injuries, it's only a matter of time before you get on the open market and you have to have a prove-it deal. Juju Smith-Schuster did the same thing. He turned that into a 3-year contract with the Patriots, and then he got hurt. So hopefully, for Kansas City's sake, it works out relatively the same way, and they're able to get a really good year out of Marquise Brown, and then he can go back into free agency and get paid elsewhere instead of the Chiefs maybe overpaying for that usage here. But regardless, I think he's a very good player, and that's really why he's in Kansas City on the quote-unquote cheap.
How does he fit? You mentioned it just briefly right there. You know, Rashee Rice, if you think of him more as a power slot, then yeah, it's great. You know, Hollywood Brown's more of the deep threat. But how does he fit overall on this roster? How do you think the Chiefs will use Hollywood Brown? Will he be using or doing any of the Kadarius Toney, any of the end arounds, any of the wide receiver screens? How do you see Hollywood Brown fitting in Andy's offense?
I've seen quite a bit of people trying to say that he's going to try and do some of the stuff that Tyreek Hill did. And that's just, it's not the case. It's not what he's good at. Especially with the Liz Frank injury, you don't want him overstressing that. You don't want him trying to do some of the things that Tyreek Hill did with making guys miss. And honestly, throughout his career, he has not been a guy that just racks up missed tackles forced. He's much more of a taking advantage of space. So when you have a guy who can, again, win at all three levels, but take advantage of open space, enter Andy Reid, who schemes everybody open and gets them into space to take advantage of. So he's not going to be creating a ton of yak on his own, but I do think that he's going to fit really beautifully with, again, Travis Kelce and Rashee Rice in the sense that he can take advantage of the space that's afforded to him. And when you scheme guys open as well as Andy Reid does, he gets them into space so well, and how teams are playing with, you know, two high safeties a vast majority of the time against Patrick Mahomes, it creates a lot of underneath space. So right now, he comes in, and he might be a guy who takes one of those safeties with him, and you see Rashee Rice on a big bender over the middle of the field underneath where, you know, Marquise Brown was. Or you see Rashee Rice coming across the field, and you have Marquise Brown going the opposite way on a couple of crossers. So I like the pairing because, like I said, if Andy Reid is able to scheme open guys into space, it plays into Marquise Brown's acceleration and his speed, so he doesn't have to try to make guys miss and then get the top speed. He can make a catch into space and then take off that way. So that's more of what I see happening here. But, yes, he can win at all three levels of the defense, which is a big drawing point for Kansas City.
Daniel Harms, film analyst of RGR Football, is our guest. Where do the Chiefs go to fill out the rest of the wide receiver room? Is it going to be a, you know, first round, second round rookie? Are there any more veterans, you know, in the cards? I'm not saying a big name guy, obviously, but I'm saying just along the lines of, let's just say a Josh Reynolds, you know, I'm trying to think of some other guys. I don't know. Kendrick Bourne, I believe, already signed a deal. I know that was kind of your guy right there.
Yeah.
Where do you think the Chiefs try and fill out the back end of the wide receiver room?
Well, we know that Justin Watson is still there. He's on the last year of his contract. So it would appear as of now that he's going to be the starter with Rashee Rice and Marquise Brown in those three receiver sets. That's what I would expect.
Very quick question. Sorry to cut you off. This is completely my fault, so I apologize. I thought this exact same thing today as well. I thought we will know a lot of how the Chiefs view Rashee Rice if, again, if it were to stay the same today, which it's not going to, if it was Justin Watson as the other starting receiver, that means Rashee's in the slot. Or if Sky Moore is the starting receiver, well, that would mean that they believe Rashee Rice is more of an outside guy. I find this very fascinating to see where they think, the Chiefs think, that Rashee Rice fits and lines up best.
Yeah, that's exactly how this is going to go. Because if the thing about that is that you have Justin Watson, who's, you know, a good player in his own right, especially for Kansas City. But they have two guys now that can play it on the outside and the inside and be actually good at doing it. And that's Marquise Brown and Rashee Rice. So how we're going to see the evolution of Rashee Rice is going to be evident early on in training camp. Is he running more on the outside? Because while he's done more 50-50, he was playing more outside near the end of the season. And Marquise Brown has never had a snap share usage under 64.5% on the outside. He's been a predominantly outside player. So that's going to be a lot of fun to see, because you have him basically in this offense. He could be the Z, and if they want Rashee to expand that route tree and be an X receiver, then that's how you're going to see it develop. But I still think right now the draft is going to be the other indicator. What type, prototype of wide receiver are they going to draft? Is it the first round? Are they going to wait until the second round? They're going to take a guy like Adonai Mitchell, who I'm doing a film review on for Wednesday on RGR Football, or a guy like Ladd McConkey. But that should also give you an idea of how the Chiefs maybe view the usage of Rashee Rice this year. So that's one of the dominoes that we have to kind of wait and see. But as of right now, before anything happens, obviously this is going to change in a month and a half's time when the draft hits, or honestly it could change by training camp in terms of how all these players are going to be used. So as of right now, I would say that you have Rashee Rice is still that mover, power stock kind of guy based off the roster construction and the production of Hollywood Brown and honestly the trust of Justin Watson. That's what I would base this on. So I think that what the idea for the draft is, okay, right now the Chiefs don't really have a big body guy unless you want to project Justin Ross into that, which again,
don't do it. We're not doing this again. We're not.
Exactly.
I'm not gonna entertain the Justin Ross hype yet again. I'm done.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Like we can't even project it there on our part because we still haven't seen anything. He's a low cost guy, and unfortunately, it's not really gotten. It's not really panned out for him. So that pretty much throws him out the window. So you don't have an X guy that right now makes sense, unless, again, you want Rashee Rice to start playing those in that spot, which we had got to see in Kansas City. So it would come down to right now the draft being kind of like that one first, second round, and maybe a bigger body guy who can project more as an X. So there's still some guys out there, like you mentioned, Josh Reynolds, who I like for the role personally. He's not a deep threat by any stretch, but what he can do is win short and intermediate, and he's a reliable player, a good blocker, a role player kind of guy that the Chiefs would like. But also, there's the rumor, once again thrown out there, Odell Beckham Jr., his 31-year season, he wants to play in Kansas City. He would fill that X type if he were to sign in Kansas City. He would be their X receiver.
Yeah, okay, hear me out here, Daniel. I know people are going to be angry, and somehow I've already heard people turn this show off because they know what I'm going to say. I would be intrigued by a one-year, $5 million contract, an up-to-something contract with OBJ. If you saw what he did last year, it wasn't bad. Like, again, I'm not expecting him to be the same guy he was in New York. If that's what you're wanting from him, that's on you. But he was a guy who had 16.1 yards per reception last year. He only played in 14 games, but he had almost 565 yards. He's got good hands. You probably trust to know where he's going to be. Again, if he is your fourth option behind Kelce, Hollywood Brown, and Rashee Rice, aren't you happy with that? I think I would be. I know he's 31 and the injuries and all that, but he always strikes me as a guy who has wanted to win. Now, I get he's at times been a little over the top, right? He's been a little bit the rumors, just in general, right? He's very outspoken. He's loud. We saw all the things that happened in New York. But as his career's progressed, has he really done anything other than want to be on a winning team? He went to the Rams, won a Super Bowl, caught a touchdown in the Super Bowl before he got injured. Went to the Ravens. The Ravens were a really good team. He got paid, of course, which obviously helped the situation. But how many wide receivers do we hear time and time again say, you know, I want to play with a great quarterback. I want to play in a winning organization, a chance to win a Super Bowl, and they sign with the bleeping Titans, right? Odell didn't do that. He actually went to a winning organization. The Chiefs would be that. So when he says, or the allegedly he says he wants to play with a winning organization on a winning team, I believe him.
Let me paint a little picture for you, because I like this. I like this scenario. And a lot of people would think, well, they brought in Marquise Brown and they would bring in Odell Beckham. Where does that leave wide receiver in the draft? Well, it still leaves them right in the first round, because you don't have to change your plans for these two players who are on 1 year contracts. So you bring them both in. You still draft two wide receivers. You let them grow for a year under two guys who have done it in the league for a while, and then you let them go at the end of the two guys, Odell Beckham and Marquise Brown, who, if everything goes well for them, they win a Super Bowl, and the Chiefs three-peat, and then they go off and sign their contracts. Then you have young talent who's gotten to see those two players, and they can step into their roles, because it took a year to learn the system and learn how it's done and see how it's done. I like that idea, but again, it comes down to the money for Odell Beckham. I said this last night on the RGR channel. If it's going to be over $10 million, I'm out. But yes, if we're talking under with some incentives, I'm absolutely in. And again, like you said, he was good last year. He was a good, valuable player to that offense. He can bring that to Kansas City. And once again, when you can see how those three, Rashee Rice, Odell Beckham Jr., and Marquise Brown actually fit together in an offense, that makes a lot of sense, and it does not prevent the Chiefs from drafting young, good wide receivers in this draft at all because of the one-year contracts.
Great picture there, Monet. Or was it Monet? I always get those two confused.
Monet.
I was being a smartass, Harms, because there's two. There's Monet and Mane, and that's just it was a dumb art joke, okay? This is why I'm not an art guy, okay? I should have said Picasso and left it, but sorry, I was trying to show off my big brain over here. Look at the big brain on Brett. If you can get that that reference, Harms, I will golf with you this year.
I mean, we're going to golf anyway, right?
Yeah. Can you get that reference?
Probably not.
Oh, man. Kyle knows what it is, don't you, Kyle? What is it, Kyle?
Oh, wait, yes.
Look at the big brain on Brett.
It's Pulp Fiction.
It is Pulp Fiction. Nails. Good job, Harms. We'll golf this year. Congratulations. You made it. You made it. All right. As far as the Chiefs go in the draft, you were down at the Combine in Indy this year. I know we're past that fairly, a few weeks now, but any wide receivers that you're enamored with that you think would be a good fit in Kansas City that are realistic fits for the Chiefs? Now we're not talking Malik Nabers. We're talking realistic fits for Kansas City.
Yeah, again, this also goes into what the Chiefs want to do with their wide receiver. And if they really do think that Sky Moore can be a slot receiver, then maybe they hold off on a year. But Ladd McConkey right now is really enticing for a lot of teams. And I think that if he's not taken at 32 – a team like the Panthers are going to take him in the top of the second round. So that's something that the Chiefs should look into, because he's a get-open-now kind of player who's going to do a lot of good things timing-wise in an offense that's predicated on timing. And he doesn't have to be a vertical threat. I know he tested fast, but that's not really his bread and butter. His bread and butter is selling those deep routes and then breaking off over the middle, underneath, all outward, all of them, because he's an extremely good seller of routes of different types with his speed, his ability to stop on a dime and break out of his routes and accelerate through those breaks. So he's definitely a really good fit, especially with a guy like Rashee Rice, who they're using as a power slot, a yak player. That's a compliment. He's a good player who gets open, and that's a really harmonious offensive pairing for those two for a long time. So he's a definite guy that fits what they're looking for at wide receiver in terms of getting open. Projection to the next level is always a hard thing to do, and I'm still an Xavier Leggett guy. 1 year of production at South Carolina.
Let's go, baby.
A lot.
On the competition. Come on. Let's go.
I like that.
Leg up on the competition, make X your X. I don't care. We'll try and find something that fits.
He had the most yards against man coverage last year in college football. I mean, it's not, and it was in the SEC. I know it was South Carolina, but it was the SEC. He has really good tape against Georgia, and he has 4.39 speed. Like, this is his game speed, too. I know that people are talking about his combine and his performance, stuff like that. And the same with Keon Coleman. Like, their play speed's different than it is. Like, he can actually play that fast on the field. And while he's not the huge, like a big change of direction guy, like you say, like a Tyreek Hill or even a Deebo Samuel is, I think he can be used that way in the NFL, but also has some real upside as a big physical X receiver. So I think he's, again, more of the X fit than I think at the end of the first round. Again, maybe if they trade back a little bit there and pick up some draft picks and are still able to take a guy like Xavier Leggett, would make a lot of sense. In the second round, let's talk a little bit of second round wide receivers, because we talk about the first round all the time, but there's not always going to be a perfect situation when they take a wide receiver in the first round, and they've never done it in the first round. Brett Beach has not drafted a wide receiver in the first round. So we have to take that into some consideration. So on day two, there's a couple of players here. If we're looking for the X, you know, Jermaine Burton, who's a fast, really good with the ball in the air, body control, body adjustment, sideline feel, all of these things, really good tracker of the football as well. But from Georgia to Alabama, there wasn't a lot of development in his route tree. But he does run NFL routes, the dig routes, the slants, and really the more of the vertical tree with the comeback routes and things like that. Those are translatable to the NFL because teams run them on every single team. And at Alabama, they have those guys run every single route. It's just not as consistent with Jermaine Burton because he doesn't get a ton of practice with it. But his on-field speed is real. Acceleration is legitimate. And again, he's got really good ball skills as an X receiver. And then a guy who I love, who was already in the national eye, is Ricky Pearsall out of Florida. Another, maybe a step down from a Ladd McConkey type player, but he's in that mold where he's going to get open underneath intermediate. He's going to be a timing-based player. His on-field speed does not match his 40 time. I didn't see that a ton. I didn't see the agilities. So he just tested it like an extreme athlete. But also we have to consider Florida's offense. Maybe he just wasn't asked to do much of anything in Florida's offense because it was not very good. So there is some projection there as well. But in my notes, I have him as a used car salesman because he'll just throw a ton of stuff at the wall for the cornerback to have to figure out and read. And he always gets them to buy what he's selling. And he's always open. He's always getting it done. So he's a guy that I really like on day two as well. He's been flying up draft boards, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him at the end of the second round, top of the third.
I know people are going to hate this. Again, Daniel Harms, film analyst for RGR Football, is our guest.
Set yourself up for success right there.
Well, no. But I don't think it's the worst decision. Like, I think people are so enamored by wide receiver because of what we saw last year, and that was everything that could go wrong did go wrong. Part of me is sitting here going, I don't want the Chiefs to be pigeonholed to take a wide receiver in the first round when there are a lot of good wide receivers later on in this draft. What if the Chiefs decide that, hey, you know what? Let's just say Devondre Sweat's right there. Wouldn't it be kind of fun to pair him alongside Chris Jones? Like, what if Ennis Rakestraw is right there, cornerback from Mizzou? I know you don't necessarily need a cornerback, but if you're not going to re-sign L'Jarius Sneed for the following season, you got a replacement. Like, what do you think of the Chiefs getting a little outside the box necessarily and not going with a position, not a tackle, not a wide receiver, but a position of legitimate best available?
Yeah, and I think the cornerback is a position where they could find themselves looking at maybe a first-round grade on their board because of the way the offensive players are going to go. We don't know what their grades are. We also know that not any team is going to have 32 first-round grades. But like the Chiefs, when they drafted Trent McDuffie, he fell further than they expected him to. So there's always that possibility, specifically in a draft like this, where we could see 7, 8 tackles and 6, 7 receivers and 4 to 5 quarterbacks go in the first round. That pushes those good defensive players down the board. And a guy like Byron Murphy likely out of their range, but I mean, if he drops to around 20, I guarantee you they're going to be calling to go get that guy. He's so good, and it would be so fun to see him paired next to Chris Jones. Thinking about that just like gets me really, really happy and excited for the future of what that could be. But it's mostly just hopeful thinking. But cornerback is, I know people are talking about the depth at corner and that they have with Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson. And I know Jalen Watson played with an injury this last year, but adding talent there is always a good thing. It's always a good thing in the NFL. Specifically like how you see Howie Roseman always throwing bodies at the trenches, I don't think it's a bad idea to just continue to throw bodies at corner. The way that, and specifically in this defense, how you have to be able to play a lot of different coverages and be able to switch from, like the Chiefs did in the Super Bowl, from a cover two type of defense to playing press man. You have to be able to be comfortable in those situations. And sometimes you have corners like Legarius Sneed and Trent McDuffie, and you're like, all right, we know we can do this. But sometimes if you have guys like Josh Williams and Jalen Watson, who are those day three picks that, in my opinion, have not grown to what everyone thinks that they played to last year, it's a good idea to continue to draft high talented corners. In a draft like this, where I think that the corner class is very good, it drops, again, those players are going to get dropped down the board specifically because of the way the offense is so talented. So I would not hate them, again, going off the wall a little bit, defensive tackle, cornerback. It would make a lot of sense, but I do think that they're going to stick that way. But it's fun to think about, for sure.
Daniel Harms, film analyst of RGR Football, is our guest. The starting left tackle to start next year for the Kansas City Chiefs is who?
Oh, man, this is a bad spot to put me in. This is a really bad spot to put me in. But Donovan Smith.
My brain, you know, I said earlier, I look at the big brain on Brett, and I got a big brain. My brain is short circuiting. I can't.
I know. I don't think, I don't know, man. I'm worried about Wanya Morris as a starting left tackle. I don't know if they're going to bring, it really just depends on what they do in the draft. If they don't bring someone in the first round, they're probably starting Wanya, or they're going to bring back Donovan Smith and start him. That's how it feels to me right now. And I think they might feel that Donovan would be able to come in and maybe win that job again. But I wouldn't do it myself. I would start, you know, Wanya Morris and then bring in someone in the draft to back him up and fight with him. But it just, I don't know, it feels like the Chiefs like what they're comfortable with and the enemy they know rather than the enemy or the player they know rather than the player they don't know. And right now it does feel that way.
Well, I don't mind bringing back Donovan Smith. I feel like Wanya Morris to me has more upside, and I've said for the longest time, and I love your thoughts on this as well. I always say defensive line and tackles, you see the biggest jump from year one to year two. I always will bring up Andrew Thomas. Giants fans thought that he was the biggest bust almost of all time. He was brutal. And then what happened? He became one of the best tackles in football. It's such a hard position to be great at as a rookie. If you see some highs as a rookie, you should be thrilled at tackle. We saw some highs from Wanya Morris. Yeah, we saw the lows, but now he understands. He's seen this now. And by the way, when you see the lows, that won't be as the norm. That'll be more of the rarity, at least in my opinion. I've always been high on Wanya. When he was drafted, I said that was my favorite draft pick in that class. Now, I might be wrong with what Rashee Rice has done, obviously. But I really like that pick of Wanya Morris. And I do believe that given the opportunity to start next year at left tackle, I don't think he's going to be a stud. But I don't think we're going to have this major concern, if you will. I do think Wanya Morris could hold his own and be an average left tackle given the opportunity next season with, again, still room to grow.
Yeah, and I want to preface this by saying I would do the same thing. It's what I would do myself. I just, when it comes to the Chiefs, it does feel like maybe they want him to grow more. Specifically because when Donovan Smith came back, obviously postseason experience plays into it. But I mean, Wanya had his injury too. So neither here nor there. I want Wanya to be the guy, but I also have some ideas about him playing inside in the future, which would be intriguing specifically when you draft a tackle in the first round or in the second round, he ends up being your starter. So I don't know how they feel about Wanya Morris and his pass protection specifically. We'll see how the growth over the offseason comes through, and that might spur them to bring in Donovan Smith. I will tell you right now, if they bring Donovan Smith back, that probably indicates, and then they draft a tackle, that might indicate that they're not exactly on par or happy with what Wanya Morris has done in the pass protection department.
I will say, I wish I actually had this pulled up. I'm a little silly. I'll try and do it in the break once we probably get you off. But, Craig, if I'm wrong, I thought Juwan Taylor's contract was now guaranteed for 2025. I thought I saw that somewhere. I would actually, you know what, I'm looking it up now. You know what, I'll do it.
Yeah, I'll look it up. Because I don't know.
I thought I saw it was somehow guaranteed for 2025 now. Let me check and see. Maybe it was a dream I had and it was a nightmare.
Maybe.
I couldn't tell. 2025, yes. Now it looks like his dead cap hit is $29.5 million. So they're not going to cut.
No.
So, yeah, because I thought the last time I looked at this, it was not that. So I believe there was a reworking of Juwan Taylor's contract.
Yeah, he got his contract restructured.
Yeah, so it looks like, well, my thought process was, the reason why I bring this up was, originally I thought, okay, if they don't touch Juwan Taylor's contract and they drafted a tackle, does that mean they believe Wanya Morris is the right tackle of the future and they draft a left tackle in this draft? That was part of my thought process, and then they would get out of Juwan's contract. But once they restructured Juwan, you're not getting out until 2026. So Juwan Taylor's going to be here. So that's good to know right there. Do you have any thoughts on the restructuring of Juwan Taylor and what that means for him going forward in Kansas City? And is a left tackle just completely out of the equation now with Juwan?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's going to be their right tackle for the foreseeable future and through the length of the contract. And I, again, I'll be very honest. I thought he played well this year. I don't think he was a stud. I don't think he was $20 million type of player. But I think he played well. And when you take into consideration the penalties and some of the ones from earlier in the season that felt targeted specifically at him, I really do think that mentally he got away from himself a little bit and he started getting in his own head. So I'm hopeful that, you know, the season being over now, them winning the Super Bowl helps kind of recollect him because he's, what, 26 years old now? He's not all of a sudden this old player that can't get any better. And over this offseason, I'm excited to see what he does because he's a good athlete. He's not a great run blocker, but that's, again, not why they brought him in. He has the ability to go back to get back to how he played in 2022, which was elite-level pass protection on the right side. And multiple times you saw him clamp down on top 10 edge rushers, and I think that sometimes you saw him do that this year. The opening game of the season, I think he did a fantastic job against Aiden Hutchinson, and that's predominantly against a player whose strength is power, and that's arguably the worst part about Juwan Taylor's game. So there's something there, and I'm going to be excited to see what he does in year two. But if year two goes relatively the same or less than it was in the first year, then you're just going to kind of live with it. But right now, I'm okay with the overpay because he wasn't, in my opinion, bad. Mm.
Daniel Harms, film analyst for RGR Football. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at InHarmsWay19. Harms, we will be golfing since you nailed the Pulp Fiction reference that I brought up. That's just how my brain works, dude. It's the most it's not even like the most like famous quote from that movie. The other day, I brought up just a random quote from Big Lebowski, and no one understood it. I'm like, Yeah, because that's not a popular one. I have no idea how my brain works, but that's the way it does. It's why I have so much random knowledge about, again, the most absurd things that, quite frankly, I will never need. But if you guys who are listening want actual knowledge, good knowledge, Chiefs knowledge, follow Harms on Twitter at InHarmsWay19. Harms, always a pleasure.
Always, man. Thank you so much for having me.
Take a break. Come back. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch, Sports Radio 810 at WHB. Again, I am Sterling Holmes. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at HomestretchKC. Thank you again to Daniel Harms. Always fun getting some analysis from Harms. Again, Kansas to be without Kevin McCullough Jr. He's going to miss the NCAA tournament with his injury. Self said, quote, Kevin's not going to play. Kevin says his knee pain has not subsided any, and it's too bad for him to be able to contribute. So Kevin will not play. We're shutting him down for the tournament. He hasn't practiced in 6 weeks, basically. He hasn't done more damage to his knee, but he tried to do it and said that he couldn't go, end quote. Massive loss for Kansas as they limped to the finish line at the end of the season. We saw what they looked like with no Kevin McCullough and no Hunter Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson should be back, but no Kevin McCullough, obviously. Not just offensively, their second best scorer, I would say, behind Hunter Dickinson, and maybe you can make the case that he's the best one. But that's a big 6'7 wing defensively that's going to be missed. So no Kevin McCullough. Does that make Samford more intriguing? A team that scores 85 plus points a game? And, yes, it does.
And they are top 10 in the country in shooting the three ball. So.
And you know who's not top 10 in the country? It's not Kansas.
Not Kansas. They are 238th, I think.
The issue is KJ Adams and Hunter Dickinson should absolutely feast. DeJuan Harris is going to absolutely feast. It comes down to, can Timberlake roll back the clock? Look like he looked 1,000. Not like he's looked at Kansas. All right, Aaron Rodgers getting a new wide receiver. That is ex-Chargers wide receiver Mike Williams, signing a one-year deal that has a value of up to $15 million. Mike Williams, 29, actually a good get for the Jets, quite frankly. They had a lot of issues at wide receiver. They tried to revamp it a couple years ago, did not work. But now Garrett Wilson, Mike Williams, Aaron Rodgers back again. Part of it's the old folks' home. It's the injured old folks' home. With Mike Williams and Aaron Rodgers and some of the pieces they have. But you look around, and I think if you're a Jet fan, you have to be optimistic. I was high on the Jets going into last year. But then Rodgers got hurt, and that went well out the window. Mike Williams is a good player. Can he stay healthy? If he stays healthy, he's still not taking on that wide receiver one role. He's still wide receiver two behind Garrett Wilson, a guy who's kind of similar to Keenan Williams, right? A guy who can just catch 100-plus balls a year, can be everywhere, be your 1,200, 1,400-yard receiver. Then Mike Williams is the deep ball guy. They complement each other very well. Yeah. So I actually think this is a really good move for the Jets. They had to do something. 1 year, maximum value of up to $15 million. Would you have done that?
No.
Same.
If you would have asked me this before Marquise Brown signed with Kansas City, I still would have said no.
This never felt like a Chiefs move.
Yeah.
A guy who's been as injured as Mike Williams, I know people will try and point up the, yeah, but he plays a lot through it. Sure. How many games has he finished? It's not how many games you've started. It's how many you've finished. I'm not trying to be like a 1900s baseball pitcher where you have to start and finish every single game, but it feels like he's going 4 or 5 innings. He ain't finishing them. I like Mike Williams in a nutshell, but that was too risky. I like the Hollywood Brown signing a lot more than the Mike Williams signing for Kansas City, especially for Kansas City. So, Mike Williams finding a new home in New York. Sorry, it's still New Jersey.
I get that.
It's the Jersey Jets. I will die on the hill that they messed up the opportunity to be called the Jersey Jets. They're not New York. They play in where? Jersey. They're liars.
Yeah.
Okay.
That logic is airtight. I'm with you.
They're liars. All right. Chase Young signed a deal, guaranteed $13 million contract with the Saints. Chase Young.
How do the Saints keep signing people?
Yeah, I told you. I've said for the longest time, 31 teams play within the confines of the salary cap. Saints are the only one that does not. You know what? Let's save the Chase Young talk to the next break, because I have a little interesting comp I want to bring up with him. We'll take a break, come back, home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Again, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can, at HomestretchKC. Kyle is behind the glass. I believe, what are you, at Kyle Collier?
Underscore 810. Yeah.
Underscore 810. Did I nail your last name?
Let me hear it again.
Collier?
Collier. There you go.
Collier?
Yeah, there you go.
Collier who?
Call your mama. Call your papa.
Okay.
The Red Hot Chili Pepper lyric. Ah, I got to get it, and I messed it up.
You got to give it to your mama. Got to give it to your papa.
There it is.
Yeah.
Give it away. There it is.
Yeah, there you go.
Right now, I'm playing this song because I'm a Kansas fan.
Have you? Yeah, no Kevin McCullers Jr. for the tournament for KU. I've never said your last name out loud before, and I was like, oh my gosh, I know how it's spelled. Do you ever do that? Like, there's certain words, like, I've seen that word a lot. And now I've known you long enough, I can't ask. Like, if I would have asked the first, like, three or four times I've met you, I think that's acceptable. But, like, I don't know if anyone else has ever gotten in that before, but you're so far in, and you're like, well, bleep, I can't do it now.
I can't do it.
Like, I've known this guy for years. Like, I can't just bring up his last name. Hey, dude, you know how I've known you for a long time? How do you say your last name again? Like, you can't do that. Like, there are certain times... to my friends, like, my friend's friends. Like, I've met them, like, 20 times.
Right.
Known them for years. Like, I don't, like, have their number, like, hang. Like, I've seen these people at different events. I'm really bad with names, by the way. And I'm still like, oh, my gosh. I don't know your name. And I can't ask. They're like, hey, Sterling, how's it going? I'm like, hey, Chief.
Oh, no. You can't go, Chief. You gotta say, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, bro.
That.
How's it going, man?
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. See, I've mastered the... Hey, how's it going, man? What's up, bro?
Yeah, that's the go-to line for me.
Dude, you want a beer?
Yeah.
And then you're like, let me get you. And you go to your friend and go, hey, what's his name again? And he's like, Sterling, you know his name.
I'm all too familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, we've all been there. If you want to fade me this March, fade me like Travis Kelce's hair, you can. But if you want to bet right here. With ESPN Bet. ESPN Bet is now live in Kansas. As the official sportsbook of ESPN, ESPN Bet is the only place to find daily exclusives and offers with your favorite ESPN personalities and shows. Sign up today and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Find all your favorite markets and bets like in-game wagering, cross-sport parlays, teasers, and all the props you can handle. That's ESPN Bet. Download today. What a play. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Must be 21 plus. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with Hollywood Casino at Kansas Speedway. Go to ESPN Bet. Download it. Do what I told you. And let's have some fun this March. You can fade me. You can win with me. But you'll get some sweat with your bet, baby. That's the way I like to live. I want to see some bumps as I have McNeese State playing Gonzaga. I want some bumps. Sorry, McNeese, they took the state out, I believe. I think it's just the McNeese Cowboys now. Sorry, I've been a big McNeese fan my whole entire life, so this is news for me.
Well, that's how you know they are serious about this tournament.
Yeah. It's like the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. When they went to the Rays, you knew they were serious.
World Series appearance.
Yeah, you got to take one. Sometimes your name is just too long. Just too long. All right, back to NFL before we bring on David Leskey to talk Royals. Chase Young, right? Does he remind you of any player?
Jadeveon Clowney.
Yes.
Was that your first one?
Yes. And I think a lot of people probably feel the exact same way.
Yeah. I mean.
And the reason is the name seemingly outweighs the production. Now, Chase Young is still young. He's only 24 years old. But he went 7.5 sacks. Great. Rookie year, rookie of the year. 1.5 sack in 9 games. 2022, no sacks in 3 games. Last year, 7.5 in 16 games between two teams, San Fran and Washington. Now, I get it. Sacks are not the end-all, be-all. But when he came into the NFL, he was supposed to be a game changer, right? He was supposed to be a dude. He was supposed to be a guy that you built your defense around.
Like the Niners did with Nick Bosa. Draft a guy that high, he's supposed to be your defensive cornerstone.
Jadeveon Clowney, first year. He played 4 games, didn't really play. Injured. 2015, played in 13 games. He was solid. 2016, started to play pretty solidly. He had 6 sacks, but he's a little bit extra. He was an All-Pro, too. Then a Pro Bowl in 2017, Pro Bowl 2018. But then he kind of had a little falling-off period, some injuries. But I think Jadeveon Clowney revitalized his career in 2021 when he went to Cleveland. Yes, he had 9 sacks, but what that Jadeveon Clowney was I'm not going to just live off of the play that got me drafted this high in college. I'm not going to just live off my name. I'm going to buy in and be a team player. I'm going to be good against the run. I'm going to stop the run. Yeah, I might not get all the sacks, but I'm going to be a good team player. And I think Jadeveon Clowney is going to stick around for a while longer. He's getting up there in age. He's, what, 31? But he's bouncing around, and he's getting decent-sized contracts because he understood what he had to do. Chase Young is going to have to figure this out at some point. As much as Chase Young wants to be this game wrecker, clearly that's not who he is. Like, the whole thing with him and San Fran was, this guy just seemingly does not care about stopping the run. If you don't care, this ain't college. You'll get schemed out. Teams won't take chances on you. You won't get that contract. You'll fizzle out of the NFL. Because you were the dude in college does not make you the dude in the NFL. Because every guy in the NFL was the dude at some point throughout their career. Jadeveon Clowney adjusted. I respect that man a lot for doing that. Because I always thought he was going to fizzle out a lot quicker. And then I did. You saw it. Right? It was a realization. Now, he wants to get his money and all that stuff. I get that. But I think he adjusted as a player. Chase Young is going to have to do that. If he wants to become that guy who sticks around into his late 20s, early 30s, and not sign a one-year $13 million contract, when I think if you would have told a lot of people, what is his second contract going to look like when he gets drafted? You would have said, what, 4 for $80 at a minimum, 4 for $90? He's going to have to adjust. Just looking out for the guys, man.
Yeah, like you mentioned, he's 24. I mean, he's still got a ton of time. And as you mentioned, you know, he's signed this one-year deal. This is a prove-it type of deal with New Orleans. And I saw a little bit ago, and I'm just now remembering it, but he's going to undergo another neck surgery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you can no longer call Chase Young a generational talent.
No.
Like you were with Clowney out of the draft, like you were with Chase Young out of the draft. But the injuries certainly have piled up for Chase Young. And now it's just, yeah, he has got to find a way to, if he wants to keep getting paid, keep earning money, he's got to find a way to stay healthy. And he's got to prove it this year in New Orleans.
He was in the 2020 draft, correct? Let me check. 1 second. I know we need to bring on Lesky, but I want to check something very quickly. 2020 NFL draft. Joe Burrow 1, Chase Young 2, Jeff Okuda 3, Andrew Thomas, who turned into that great guy 4, Tua Tagovailoa 5, Chargers drafted Herbert 6. You think that Washington would have liked Justin Herbert or Tua Tagovailoa or Andrew Thomas or... I know.
Don't do that to the Commanders.
I know I'm nitpicking right now. Decade. Don't you think Denver would have rather had CeeDee Lamb instead of Jerry Jeudy? Oh! 2 spots later! Take a break. Come back. We'll be joined by David Lesky, talking Royals. Home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch. Sterling Holmes joined now by David Lesky from Inside the Crown. Make sure you go to insidethecrown.substack.com for the best Royals analysis delivered directly to your email. It is the best out there. I read it every single morning with my morning coffee. Lesky, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm golden. I am rocking my Royals City Connect little hoodie, half zip. It's a half zip. It goes almost down to your, not your belly button, your sternum.
That wouldn't be a half. If it went to your belly button, that would be a full, that would be an 80% zip.
Yeah, this is a half zip. It's in between the belly button and the sternum. So it's not a quarter zip. It's in between. I like it, but it got me thinking. The Royals probably have the best City Connects out there. Where do you rank the Royals City Connect jerseys?
I mean, I haven't looked at all of them and ranked them, but just thinking through. So Washington's are great. I like the Rockies, even though they're not, some people don't love them. I think that they're up there. I like the Mariners, although I don't like the black pants. It's kind of a weird look to me. I hate the Rangers. I think theirs looks terrible. The Reds is cool because it's the red on all black is interesting. The Angels are pretty good. Brewers are pretty good. I don't like the Giants.
The Rockies, I'm not going to lie. The Rockies reminds me of a beer league softball team.
I agree, but it's also fun. I think the Royals probably top 3 to 5 in my opinion. I'm a little biased because I, like the Royals. But I don't think anybody would argue anything but Baltimore is being the worst.
Oh, I don't know if I know Baltimore's.
They are. So it's all black with, what's around the sleeve? It's like a mosaic, sleeve piping.
Ooh, that's bad.
It looks like you remember the Great Britain WBC uniform?
Yes.
it's a nicer version of those.
Ooh.
So I don't think anybody would argue anything but those being the worst. I like the Royals a lot. I'm trying to think the ones I don't really like. Dodgers is just boring because it's just Los Dodgers. I love the Braves. I don't know if that's a popular opinion, but I love theirs. I actually like Pittsburgh's, even though it's just not all that different than their uniform. Let's see. Angels is pretty good. I like that one. There's not a lot I don't like. I understand why Boston's is what it is. I don't like it because the Red Sox not wearing red is weird. But yeah, the Royals are good, very good.
I'm just gonna go ahead. Yeah, you're right. The yellow, it looks like you are you're running like a marathon or something. Is that what it's for?
Well, it's for the Boston Marathon. Yeah.
Okay. So then it makes sense. Okay.
I just don't like it. I totally understand the inspiration. It's just not. I don't like it.
I'm not going to lie. Going back to the Rockies, I'm just picturing them coming up, listening to Corn or something on a boombox. That's all I can think about. Limp Bizkit, all the people I play softball with, the teams you play against, they have their last name on the back of their jersey. For some reason, there's 69.
And you know what they pull out of their back pocket? They pull out a Coors at Coors Field. Done.
All right, let's get into it. You wrote a good article, again, on Inside the Crown, a closer look at the Royals' fifth starter candidates. And you and I, same page, I think the majority of folks just almost assumed, because of the contract, Jordan Lyles was going to be number five. But you dug a little deeper here. Hold the phone, not so fast. What did you find?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that heading into the offseason, or heading into the spring training from the offseason, we'd heard this is going to be a competition and Jordan Lyles isn't guaranteed the job. And my thought from that was, that's a really good way to spin it because nobody wants Jordan Lyles to win the job. So to say that it's a competition, that's good. There's a risk to that, of course, if he struggles. I thought it was kind of a farce. As it turns out, not so much. And multiple people who I trust and who I believe and who know what they're talking about have told me, hey, this is real, man. Don't dismiss it. And I dismissed it. And you hear the same thing enough from enough different people. And it really makes you reevaluate, I guess. And so kept hearing it and finally decided, okay, this is a real competition. And I think ultimately, in the beginning, if you pinned J.J. Piccolo against a wall and gave him some truth serum, he probably would have said it's Daniel Lynch or Jordan Lyles. I don't think that's the case anymore. And they talked. Alex Marsh was in there. Angel Serpa was in there. I wonder a little bit. Anthony Veneziano didn't pitch for like 2 weeks. I don't know what was going on there. Maybe I missed something, but maybe he could have been possible. But I don't know. And I think that what's transpired is Serpa, I think, hung around the competition a little bit, and then he struggled, and I think they see him as more of either a reliever or rotation depth in AAA. Great, fine. But Alec Marsh has had a great spring. I mean, he's got 14 innings pitched, 17 strikeouts, 3 walks. You want to talk about spring training stats? Strikeouts and walks are the closest thing that matter. Sample still is too small, but in a small, those numbers tend to normalize faster than any other number, strikeouts and walks. So 14 innings is still probably not quite enough, although I said that right now, and people will nod and say, yeah, you're absolutely right, it's not nearly enough, and they will bash a reliever in early May who has 14 innings. So let's keep that in mind as the season gets underway. But Marsh has pitched himself not only into the conversation, but I think into the lead.
Wow.
Because Jordan Lyles has pitched in big league games twice this spring. He threw 2 innings early in the 6th or 7th game, whatever it was, then threw on a backfield, which a lot of times these big leaguers do. It's not about who they face. It's not about getting hitters out. It's about getting repetitions. And he hurt his back, and then he was out for a while. Finally got into a game on, I think it was Saturday. Yeah, it was Saturday against the Cubs. Gave up back-to-back-to-back home runs in the first and another home run in the third and then left. And then to make matters worse for him, he was replaced by Alec Marsh, who, yes, gave up a home run, but went 4 innings, struck out 5, and didn't walk anybody. So not only did he struggle, but his biggest competition at that time pitched well. That's a bad combination when you're in a battle for a roster spot. And I think that's been a big, big difference. Daniel Lynch just hung around. I don't think that Lynch, it's a foregone conclusion that Lynch doesn't win the job. I believe he's pitching today or tomorrow on a backfield. So we won't know how it went other than what they tell us, because there's no stats, obviously. But he's still in it. But I think if the season started today, and we're getting dangerously close to that being accurate, yeah, I think Alec Marsh would be the 5th starter.
Who do you want to be the 5th starter? Not who you think, but who do you want to be the 5th starter and why?
My answer, well, I have 2 answers. The first is a much more basic, not Jordan Lyles. and the reason, and that sounds mean, and I don't mean it that way. It's just that he's not good. And we know he's not good.
Okay,
right?
Very quickly though, Lesky, isn't there some room, again, I'm not trying to be a Jordan Lyles apologist here, but I'm trying to at least paint the full picture. He is a guy that the Royals obviously trust, who's had success in the past. He was atrocious last year. I mean atrocious. But the underlying numbers suggested, quite frankly, he was a little bit of a better pitcher than what a lot of the final numbers were put up. Again, when you pitch that many innings, that many starts, eventually you are what the back of your baseball card says you are. But again, is there any sort of maybe, okay, that was a horrendous down year, there is a chance for a bounce back with him?
Yes. Look at the expected ERA, which is a baseball savant stat. His ERA with the Orioles in 2022 was like 4.42, I want to say, 4.41, somewhere in there, around 4.4. His expected ERA was, I believe, 4.91.
Yeah.
Last year with the Royals, his ERA was over 6. His expected ERA was 4.96. So there's an argument to be made that Jordan Lyles was exactly the guy that they signed, and just the luck went the other way. I think that's fair. There are some numbers. His strand rate was ridiculously low. You just don't see guys strand fewer than 60% of runners very often. And unfortunately for Lyles, he did it a couple years earlier too. but also generally has been 70% plus, which is pretty normal. So there's that. There's also his batting average on balls in play allowed was 255, which is really low. So that kind of says that maybe he was even luckier than he. Yeah. So it goes back and forth with him. I do think that there is room for a bounce back, 100%. But what I was going to say before you rudely interrupted me was was that even at the upside, you're looking at a 4.5 to 5 ERA. The difference between the upside for Lyles and then the upside for Marsh or Lynch, which also there's a difference in upside between those two, but the difference is big. Daniel Lynch hasn't put up an ERA below 4.5 in his big league career. I don't think anybody would be, you know, if you fast forward to October 1st, and the season ends September 29th this year, if you fast forward to September 30th, let's say, and you look at Daniel Lynch got 32 starts and had a 3.92 ERA, I don't think you'd be surprised.
I think the 30 starts would make me the most surprised.
Well, sure, but we're suspending some reality here. And again, ERA is not the best indicator, but if you fast forward to that same point and Jordan Lyles also had 32 starts with a 3.92 ERA, I think you'd be pretty surprised. I really do. I think that you would look at that and go, wow, how did that happen? Brian Sweeney should win a Nobel Prize. truly. And then the difference, and I'm going to get to my answer here in a second, my actual answer, the difference in upside between Lynch and Alec Marsh, there's also a difference there. I don't think Lynch has the upside that he either once did or we once thought he did, and those might be two different things. Marsh, I believe, because he's able, first of all, he can run it up there at 97, 98. Daniel Lynch can't do that right now. I don't know where his velocity is. I don't know if it'll come back, but it was down last year. It's been down this spring. Hasn't come back yet. I just don't see that ability. Marsh gets a lot of swing and miss. His whiff rate on all of his pitches but his sinker, the lowest was 25.8%. And so that's times the batter swings and misses in those swings. So it's not just overall pitches, but he gets a lot of swing and miss. Daniel Lynch doesn't get that. And when you don't get swing and miss, your upside is limited. Daniel Lynch does get some swing and miss. His slider gets a fair amount. His changeup gets a fair amount. But Marsh gets it on 4 or 5 different pitches. And that, to me, gives him the highest upside. And I don't think, as far as downside is concerned, I don't think there's a single pitcher who has a lower downside than Jordan Lyles. So think back to Alec Marsh last year. He struggled, right? He was not great. His ERA was a half run better than Jordan Lyles. So that's my answer. It's Alec Marsh is the guy I want to win the job. And it may not work out, but they've actually got depth now to support it if it doesn't. And I'd rather have the guy in the fifth starter spot who may be really good and may need to be replaced than the guy who we know isn't any good.
David Leske is our guest, and I think you're correct in the assessment as well that the top four guys, there's no longer as many concerns. Now, they're not guys that have shown the ability to pitch a ton of innings in Major League Baseball so far, but there's far less concerns of them getting blown up and having to get pulled after 2 or 3 innings. Cole Reagans, Brady Singer, Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo. What have you seen from those four so far this spring?
I mean, Reagans he struggled results-wise in his last couple starts, but the strikeouts are there, the walks are not there, which is a good thing. He's looked dominant. If you follow Pitching Ninja on Twitter, you can see some of the swings and misses.
It's just Sword City.
Ugly swings. Yeah, totally. And I'm not going to sit here and say Cole Reagans is going to do what he did last year with the Royals in 12 starts and do it over 30 starts. I hope he does. But there was that one scout. Did you read that ESPN article that compared him, called him a left-handed DeGrom?
No, I've not seen.
I mean, there was in a passing article, and called him a left-handed version of Jacob DeGrom. I think that's really lofty, and I probably wouldn't have said that myself, but it's kind of cool that somebody did. He's been fine. Waka had a bad first start, maybe a second start, whatever it was. He seems to have kind of gotten in a rhythm. His changeup was outstanding the last time he pitched. I think he's also going on a backfield either today or tomorrow. I can't remember which, I think it's today. So, again, one of those situations, we're not going to know, oh, he struck out 9, and if he did, it was 9 minor leaguers, but so whatever. But the changeup finally got there for him last start, which that's a field pitch, that's a timing pitch. It's okay if it's not there. Lugo, kind of similar situation. He struggled with the curve a bit. It's a feel pitch. He's got to get a feel for it. That's what spring training is for. I also think that he's probably a guy who struggles a bit in Arizona. So I think that's okay. And then Brady Singer, kind of been the Brady Singer experience this spring. I don't think you're really going to know what you get from start to start, but I think that there's always a chance it can be a really special one. And I appreciate that he's trying to add a four-seam fastball, trying to add a sweeper to his arsenal. I think those two pitches will help quite a bit. So working on these things in game situations, it makes it understandable if he does struggle. He's had a couple really good starts, too. So those four, you feel, like you said, it's not you don't look at those four and say, oh, well, there's four Cy Young candidates. There might be one with Reagan's. But you feel pretty good 4 out of 5 days before you even know who the starter is, that they're going to keep the Royals in the game at the very least.
With Cole Reagans, very quickly, I love that they compare him to a right-handed, or I guess he's a left-handed Jacob deGrom. I'm glad we've finally moved on from lefties either being Chris Sale or Randy Johnson.
Well, the next one is, the cross-hand comparison is great. You don't see a cross-race comparison very much, so I don't know who the right-handed non-white pitcher is who they can compare him to next, but whoever that is...
Pedro Martinez. It's going to be Pedro.
It's not Pedro because he doesn't have the changeup. Well, he doesn't have the changeup, but they're just different. They're very different styles of pitcher, so it can't be Pedro. Who could it be? Who?
Felix Hernandez. Boom.
Maybe.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I don't think that's right either. you're
sorry naming, for trying here, Lesky. Sorry.
You're just naming non-white right-handed starting pitchers. I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
I don't really appreciate it.
Jose Lima.
Oh, getting worse.
We need to start comparing left-handed pitchers to John Franco. It's been too long. He's been out of the game too long. It's time to start bringing those names back up. I'm tired of lefties being Chris Sale or Randy Johnson. That's my main point here. It's like
you're not wrong. Well, it's either Chris Sale or Randy Johnson or like Jamie Moyer. You get a lot of that.
Yeah.
Well,
because in football, you're either Alex Smith or you're Brett Favre. There's no in between. Those are the only two you have.
Right.
So
yeah. I'm looking on the leaderboards right now to see if I can find anybody in the game today who pitches from the right side. I don't know. I'm not finding a Cole Reagans comparison here, but we'll get there. Maybe
there is no comp, baby, because Cole Reagans is one of one.
One of one.
David
or
Lesky.
One of two if you include Jacob deGrom.
There we go. David without the injuries, of course, hopefully.
Right.
David Lesky is our guest from Inside the Crown talking about the batters now. Have we figured out who the center fielder is? You know me and my love for Drew Waters and your affinity for Kyle Isbell.
Okay, first of all, I don't have I'm interrupting you because I'm just going to start talking.
No. I want you to pontificate about why you think Kyle Isbell is the greatest center fielder in the history of the game.
Well, there's a number of reasons, and I don't feel like sharing them with you. But we figured out who the center fielder was in October. Remember, think back to that press conference. The press conference that Piccolo and Matt Quatrero had, they talked about like a few players who show what they wanted to see. And one of them was Kyle Isbell. Kyle Isbell has been the center fielder for the 2024 Royals since the day the 2023 season ended. There was never a real competition. Because the reality is, Kyle Isbell is the best defensive center fielder they have. And they worked to build a lineup, and this isn't why they did it, but this is the end result. They worked to build a lineup that could support Kyle Isbell's bat. because they need him in center field. It's the same thing as Michael A. Taylor was. It's the same thing as we've seen for years in Kansas City. They had they wanted a great defensive center fielder, and they are not wrong for that given the size of the ballpark. They just need to build a lineup that allows them to not have to find a great defensive center fielder who can also hit really well, because they need Kyle Isbell in the lineup, but they need him in the lineup eighth or ninth. And what they've done through, I don't love the moves they've made offensively this year, but what they've done is they've lengthened the lineup. So Kyle Isbell is probably should never hit above seventh. And that's okay, and that's where they need to be. Because Isbell is a better defender than Drew Waters. And offensively, Drew Waters has higher upside, yes, but he's not, it's not like you can look at Drew Waters' bat and say, oh, he's definitely going to hit 260, 330, 450. No, he's not. And what Kyle Isbell, what he needs to do, I even hesitate to say needs to do, but what the Royals would like from him, because of the moves they made, if he can be a 260 hitter with a 300 on base and 400 slugging percentage, that's enough. Now let's look at some projections. Kyle Isbell, zips 254, 312, 405. That's okay. Yeah,
strong.
That's strong. It's exactly where they need him to be. You look at the steamer projections. 253, 11, 399. That's pretty much where he needs to be. Now, here's the crazy thing. You look at what he did in the second half. 262, 300. No, hang on. 262, 300, 399. So, in the second half, he was pretty much the player who the Royals need him to be this season. And they're going to give him that chance. And the projections like that, I feel like that was probably a good indicator of who he is. I'm not saying he's going to be guaranteed to be the center fielder on July 1st, but he was always going to be the center fielder on March 28th.
Sure. I always have issue personally, and maybe it's because of my narcissism, skepticism of watching so many Royals players get hot in the second half when there's nothing on the line. MJ Melendez, I don't think, is doing the same thing. I don't think that stretch that Drew Waters had, it wasn't the entire second half, but that stretch where he was helping lead the offense is going to continue. We've been beat down so many times by Royals who have done that I have to see it for a full season instead of the part of the season where maybe they're going up against 40-man roster guys instead of legit.
Yeah, but September is also different now than it was before, because they don't expand to 40. They expand to 28.
Sure.
So you're not seeing as many minor leaguers. I'm not even saying you're wrong. I think that there needs... It's similar to spring training in that it's not enough of a sample. You can't take as much from it as you want to. But it's also, you'd rather be good than bad.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is, we're looking at this. That was good for an 85 weighted runs created plus. So 15% below average. That's all Kyle Isbell needs to be, as long as the rest of the lineup supports that. If Hunter Renfroe struggles again and MJ Melendez reverts back to first half, and he's a really interesting case to me. We can get into him in a minute if you want. But... And Michael Garcia doesn't improve on his, by the way, also 84 weighted runs created plus last season. Everybody loves Michael Garcia. He wasn't great offensively. If those guys regress or don't progress, I think that there's a world where the Royals they just can't rely on Kyle Isbell. They need Drew Waters or, gosh, maybe Daron Blanco, who... I mean, the batted ball metrics don't support anything about what he did last year, but he did put up nice numbers. Or maybe if Gavin Cross comes up and hits the ground running, which is, I think, possible. I'm not going to predict it, but it's possible. If that happens, they probably need to look in a different direction than Kyle Isbell. But if they have a lineup that allows him to hit eighth or ninth on most nights, they're going to be just fine.
Two things really quickly. So Gavin Cross, you're saying center fielder, correct?
early. I don't think he stays there long.
Okay.
You could probably hear this in my voice.
Well, my thought process was corner outfielder as well.
I think ideally, yeah, because the Royals, again, they're not wrong with the size of their outfield. Having a great defensive center fielder is of more use to the Royals than, the Reds, let's say. So I don't think they're wrong to want better defense because there is so much more ground to cover. And also, by the way, who's flanking him? Most nights it's going to be MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe. Melendez is athletic. He's faster than you realize.
Did you see his range? I pulled this up. I think it was on Baseball Savant the other day. His range was in the second percentile.
Yeah, there's some things about Melendez that I find really interesting, and I think that I know that we're tired of learning about players, but I think we're still learning about Melendez. We can get into him in a second, but I don't know. I think that they need that guy who can go get it, and if Gavin Cross can go get it for a couple years before he has to move to a corner, I don't think they'd hesitate to put him there.
Yeah. All right, David Lesky is our guest, getting into MJ Melendez. Okay, what's your take on MJ here? Why are you so enamored by this guy?
He's I don't know if I'm enamored.
Enigma.
Maybe I am.
He's an enigma. There we go.
He's very interesting. And so the story of Melendez, obviously a second-round pick, struggled, COVID year happened, came back in 2021 and was a freak of nature. Offensively, right? Played in AA and AAA. I'm trying to remember the exact numbers. It was kind of nuts. I'm pulling it up right now. He hit in 2021 in AA, 285, 372, 628, 12.4% walk rate, 21.9% strikeout rate. Really solid. I mean, more than solid. AAA. As a 22-year-old in 2021, 293, 413, 620. That's great. 17.4% walk rate, 21.2% strikeout rate. His swinging strike rates were 11.7% at both levels. It just very, consistent. This is a guy who can hit. And in 2022, he started a little bit slow in AAA, only a handful of games. But then called up to the majors, 2022, he was roughly a league average hitter. I know people struggle with a 217 average being a league average hitter, but 98 weighted runs created plus. He worked some walks. He didn't strike out a ton. His swinging strike rate was in line with the minor league numbers at 11.4%. Like, all this stuff pointed to, okay, he can take a step the next year. And then he comes out last season and was just horrific in the first half. No doubt. I mean, nobody's going to look at that first half and say anything about it. He was swinging and missing more than he had before, all that good stuff. Makes a small adjustment at the All-Star break, moves his hands, some other things too. But that was the big change. And then in the second half, hit 273, 352, 485. So now you start to look at the full body of work, and you've got monster 2021 in the minors, league average 2022 in the majors, bad first half, and then did kind of what we hoped he would do all season in the second half. And you start to think, at what point is the first half the aberration? Right? Doesn't that make sense?
Sure. I want to believe in him, too. Because when you look at what he actually did in totality last year, very, very quickly, I apologize, his OPS plus was 95, right? His OPS was 713. So after how bad of a first half he had, the end result offensively, again, defensively was not good, but the end result offensively ended up very close to a league average bat.
Right. And if you look at the batted ball data, we talked about this in the first half. We're going, why is he not hitting better? He's hitting the snot out of the ball at good launch angles. He's barreling, all that stuff. He wasn't making enough contact. it's pretty simple. Baseball, it's not a difficult game to understand. It is difficult, and it's not difficult in a lot of ways. But if you go in that first half, what did he hit? 206, 289, 333, is that right? Yeah, that looks right. And he did that with just way too many strikeouts, way too much swing and miss. Trying to pull the swing and strike rate was 16.1%. That's awful. Now, he didn't improve enough, in my opinion, to be totally sold on him in the second half, but his swing and strike rate was down to 13.4% in that second half. That's a lot closer to the 11.5-ish that he showed before. And again, I gave you the numbers. The strikeout rate went down. The walk rate kind of stayed the same. What I found encouraging was by hitting the ball, by making more contact, the batted ball metrics didn't drop off. I mean, they did a little bit, but not enough to really matter. So he was still hitting the snot out of the ball at the right launch angles, at barreling it as often as he was. So it's one of those things that, I mean, part of it's that you want to believe, but part of it is there's a lot of evidence that says you should believe. And then on the defensive side, this is where I'm very curious to see what he does. I've written this before. This is the first year he's gone to camp not as a catcher. So you want to, we can bash his defense all we want. The Royals have done him zero favors in becoming a better defensive outfielder. I know they've got Rusty Koontz and all that, but they've called him up to the majors in 2022 when he was catching. The only time he'd spent outside from behind the plate was at third base the year before, and they pushed him in the outfield. Then he comes to camp last year as a catcher again, even though I think we all knew he wasn't a catcher.
Yeah.
And he's working as a catcher. How do you get better as an outfielder when you are working with as the most demanding defensive position? You don't. And so I'm not saying he's going to be great. I'm saying I think it's worth giving him a shot when he hasn't spent the spring working as a catcher and the off season working as a catcher, because you just can't judge an outfielder you can't judge an outfielder who's worked as a catcher, because there's just no time to become a much better outfielder. And there are guys who can do it. Dalton Barshow, all these guys. I'm not saying that MJ Melendez deserves a pass for being terrible, but I also think the Royals did him no favors.
I will also point out the reason why I bring up range and why maybe it is a little unfair for me is, you're right, reaction time. You got to get used to it, man. It's just so different. This isn't softball here. And by the way, like, I can't play outfield in softball. I've always been a shortstop. You put me out there for a game, I'm atrocious.
Yeah.
It's between that, my athleticism, and the fact I may have had about 7 or 8 Busch Lights. But still, the fact remains, they're in the big leagues here. The balls move different. So I think the range will have a big impact. We'll see if that goes up this year. If we see a fairly high rise in that metric and him getting a quicker jump reaction time, then I think we could start looking more so of, okay, maybe he actually is a outfielder, not just a below average guy, but maybe even more in the average range, because we do know the arm is pretty solid.
And jump, I was going to bring that up too, because he ranked among 101 outfielders as getting the, 6th worst jumps in baseball.
Yeah.
That'll impact your range too, obviously. And you look at that, and his sprint speed is in the 55th percentile. So he's not slow. He's not a burner by any stretch, but he's not slow. You feel like working as an outfielder and improving that jump time can only help him improve on that range. You look at, let's go back to Kyle Isbell, third best in baseball.
Yeah.
Kyle Isbell gets phenomenal jumps. MJ Melendez gets terrible jumps. The year before, Isbell was first in baseball, by the way.
Well, it's like Alex Gordon. Gordon wasn't fast. Gordon wasn't fast, but he had just a phenomenal innate ability to read the ball off the bat very quickly. That's what it came down to.
And especially the corners. I go back. I don't think we talked about this, but you may not have been on the air yet. But when the Royals acquired Jorge Soler, his sprint speed was like, this is surprising, but it was like 28.2 feet per second, which was like 70th percentile. Nobody would believe that now, but he really was a pretty fast guy. He's a terrible outfielder. I thought, put him in center field. Why center field? Because the ball doesn't move. You see the ball true off the bat in center field. Corner outfield is tough. It's the ball to come. You just don't see the ball straight off the bat the way you do in center field. And so to learn in a corner, it takes some time. And so, that's all to say, again, I don't know if Melendez is going to be passable, below average, above average, great. I don't know. But I do know that he hasn't – I don't think he's been given the tools for us to truly judge what he will be yet, and I think we'll know much better by midseason this year.
David Leskey from Inside the Crown. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DBLeskey. Make sure you go to insidethecrown.substack.com again. Make sure you subscribe. You still doing the giveaway? If you subscribe, you got some giveaways going on for opening day?
I do. The subscribe is getting a little different. Sorry, guys, but starting April 2nd, if you want to read it, you got to pay. There's going to be a free article most weeks, but I got to make some money on this
thing. Okay, Leskey, I didn't know there was a free option. I've been paying the whole time, so I think...
There's not a free option for you.
Anyway, that must have been why.
Paid subscribers, I do. I'm giving, at the end of this week, I'm going to give away 2 Negro League Baseball Museum memberships. So, you got to be a paid subscriber to be eligible. And then I'm going to give away some opening day tickets with parking. Probably, I should probably do that sooner than later, so people have a chance to plan. I guess it's midday on Thursday. But, so probably early next week, I'll give away a couple opening day tickets and parking.
So, everyone listening, subscribe and pay.
Yep.
Subscribe and pay. Support
pay
David Leskey.
For me to buy diapers for my baby.
All right, so it's for the Leskey College Fund. Leskey, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sterling.
We'll take a break. Come back. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Well, first of the first four just wrapped. Wagner moving on as Wagner beat Howard. I will say, when I see Wagner, I just want to say Wagner. Like, just get real jerk, like Franz Wagner. That's all I think about. But Wagner moving on. They were up a lot. And then Howard came storming back. Wagner with a 3-point victory. They hold. They advance. Colorado State plays Virginia up next. We'll be having that game come to you right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So when I get off at 8, hang around, because Colorado State and Virginia will be tipping off. That game tips off at 8:10. Perfect, right? 8:10, 8:10. Of course, we had to play the game here. So if you want to listen to it, it'll be coming on right after this. Colorado State is 2.5-point favorites, over under 121. 0.5, a little lower scoring game. During that break after Leskey, Kyle and I were talking, and he showed me the clip of Bill Self talking about Kevin McCullers, and it was interesting. It was actually asked yet again. We know he'll be missing that first game. The reporter asked that. We know he'll be missing the first game, but what about later? And he goes, oh no, we're shutting him down. Like, it wasn't a case of, okay, you goes on a run, he might come back.
Yeah, we'll see.
It wasn't a we'll see. It's a, oh no, we're shutting him down for the tournament. So, no Kevin McCullers, so adjust your brackets accordingly. Again, I'm going back and forth hardcore with McNeese versus Gonzaga. My gut says McNeese. Because they're the same team to me. I love the teams that win a lot of games and not great conferences that put up a lot of points. It's like Samford against Kansas. What do I do, Kyle?
You have to go with McNeese. You've been talking about him all night.
I mean, go.
It has to be
roll
McNeese.
With McNeese.
It's the Cowboys.
Roll with the Cowboys. Man, I love March. I can't wait to just
and
have
you
my.
Have to have them beating Purdue as well.
I can't wait to have my bracket busted after 2 games. Going to be incredible. This is the home stretch here, right here, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you again to Daniel Harms. Make sure you follow him for Chiefs Talk at In Harms Way 19. Make sure you follow David Leskey. All things Royals at DB Leskey. Make sure you follow Kyle Collier. Nailed it. Nailed it. His Twitter handle's too hard for me. I'm Sterling Holmes. You can follow me at HomeStretchKC. Until next time, we are out.